Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
The Wizard of Another World by John Christopher. Reading and music by the author.
The Wizard of Another World, a tale of intergalactic wizards and Reuben sandwiches. Carlos was juggling food orders. A big order for Reuben sandwiches had just come down from the conference room of the Perry Hotel in Salt Lake City, Utah. Carlos, who was in his second week at his new job, a short order cook, was a bit overwhelmed. The head chef, Kelly, had put Carlos in charge of the order and left to go take care of other kitchen business. Right now, Carlos was up to his elbows in corned beef, sauerkraut, and Thousand Island dressing. Carlos was from Long Beach, California, and had just moved to Salt Lake City a month earlier. He was a recent convert to Mormonism and had moved to the city to be closer to the heart of his new religion. Even though he was overwhelmed by the order for Reuben sandwiches, he tackled the work with the zeal of a saint. In a short bit, 24 Reuben sandwiches, each with a side of potato salad, a bag of chips, and a pickle, were on their way up to the conference room. Soon, compliments began to trickle down to the kitchen. "Outstanding sandwiches," was a consensus of the people enjoying the Reubens. Maybe it was the corned beef. Maybe it was the new brand of sauerkraut Kelly had recently ordered. Maybe it was the Thousand Island dressing Carlos had whipped up from scratch. Maybe it was because Carlos forgot to put Swiss cheese on the sandwiches, but something was magical about Carlos's Reubens. Elsewhere, thousands of light years away, on a little planet in the Cygnus system named Meeble Meeble, Wynden of Francis, the exalted Grand Wizard of Meeble Meeble, was planning his next adventure in cosmic tourism. Wynden had traveled to over 1,000 worlds during his lifetimes and had written numerous books that filled the libraries of Meeble Meeble with accounts of his daring exploits. Wynden's large home was filled with trophies from his various adventures. Heads of strange and exotic beasts lined the walls of his great rooms. His shelves were full of various strange rocks, stones, gems, and crystals. His treasury was filled with the currency of 1,000 worlds. Wynden's library, his greatest treasure, had over 40,000 volumes written in 1,500 languages, all of which Wynden could read and speak fluently. Wynden was over 700 years old, and he figured he still had over 100 good years left in this incarnation. Wynden had been reincarnated over 20 times so far and could remember every one of his incarnations. Such was the way of things for an exalted grand wizard. Once, thousands of years ago, Wynden had been a neophyte wizard with a dozen incantations under his belt. Spells to make objects appear out of thin air is an example of the kind of thing a neophyte wizard would learn to do. One day, his master wizard, the great and famous Merlin of Francis, had taught him the spells necessary to travel between worlds instantaneously. After Merlin taught him the incantations, he demonstrated them for Wynden, disappeared, and never returned. In the wizard tradition, this meant that Wynden had now graduated to intermediate level. His growth, learning, and survival were now in his own hands. Wynden embraced his new status with gusto and spent hundreds of years learning the mysteries of the great traditions of wizards. Nearly all the things wizards did were based on spells and incantations. Everything in the universe is made up of energy, information, and frequencies, so incantations, or the use of sound to alter the structure of the universe, is a very practical method of causing desired changes. Before the end of Windon's first life, he learned the sacred spells to control his reincarnation. After that, Windon spent lifetime following lifetime learning his craft, rising higher and higher among the ranks of the wizards of Meeble. A lifetime ago, Windon had achieved the highest rank, exalted Grand Wizard. Now he had over 100 neophyte wizards studying at his world-famous College of Incantations in Francis, the capital of the planet. Meeble, in case you're wondering, means happy or joyous in the ancient language of Meeble. It was such a happy place, so happy they named it twice. As you can imagine, Windon of Francis had vast knowledge about the universe. He was quite aware that there were millions of planets inhabited with humans. Humanoids are plentiful wherever a person went in the universe, regardless of the galaxy they visited. Humanoids are one of the most common forms of organic intelligence in the universe, right after mushrooms. Many, many millennia ago, the culture on Meeble had tried to use rocket ships and spaceships to travel to other worlds. These forms of travel were so limited that the wisest people on the planet started to look for new ways of traveling. It took a number of generations, but eventually spells and incantations were discovered, and the tradition of the wizards began. It took a whole series of spells to move from one world to another, but the process, to an experienced wizard, was a simple 5-minute chant in the delightful and ancient language of Meeble. Windon had favorite worlds he liked to visit often. Some worlds he visited just to pick up a few delicacies not available on his home planet, little things to spice up his meals. Some planets he'd go and visit for years at a time, to places where he had built other houses. The life of an exalted Grand Wizard can be lonely unless you have a companion, and Windon had one, a dog named Samson. Samson was a golden retriever that was permanently 2 years old due to one of Windon's spells. Samson was playful, adventurous, and brave beyond belief. For example, Samson had stood up to the fierce accipods of Andromeda, frightful and dangerous creatures. He had traveled to hundreds of planets with Windon and loved to feel the jolting shift as they transitioned from one existence to another. The feeling was a bit like a roller coaster drop, followed by a bounce on a cosmic trampoline. Windon had recently returned from a planet several galaxies away called Pulo. Windon had built a house out of gold on a mountain there. They had a special malleable kind of gold on Pulo called trout gold. Windon had started building his house years ago after he met a wizard who was from a planet many light years away. The wizard was named Jonas Knight. Jonas had a companion dragon named Nathan. Nathan had a nose for trout gold, like all dragons do, and Jonas helped Windon find a literal ton of gold to build his house from. Windon had built his golden house high in the mountains above the forests of Los Angeles, as Jonas called the area with all the trout gold. Windon was very impressed by Jonas. Even though he said he was just in his 40s, Jonas seemed to possess the knowledge of an exalted Grand Wizard. Naturally, Windon was curious about Jonas's home planet. Jonas had told Windon all about Earth, his home planet, warning him that he didn't want to really visit there for at least another 1,000 years. According to Jonas, Earth was currently in a very bad part of space that was bombarding the planet with horrendous cosmic rays. It was driving the people on Earth crazy. Fortunately, the planet and the star system it was a part of would be through the bad section of space in about 1,000 years, and it would be a better time to visit. Windon was fascinated by Jonas's stories about Earth. He hadn't visited a world with such a primitive yet technologically advanced civilization before, especially one caught in the midst of cosmic ray-influenced insanity. Over a number of years, the fascination turned into an overwhelming curiosity. Earth wasn't in any of Windon's many books about space, the universe, and the numerous galaxies. Surprisingly, there was no mention of this backwater planet in any of his volumes from over 1,000 worlds. Stories that Jonas had told about various cities on the planet ran through Windon's mind. New York, Salt Lake City, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, They all sounded so interesting and irresistible to a seasoned traveler like Wyndon. He had especially questioned Jonas about the food, because this was the most interesting thing about traveling for Wyndon. Jonas had told him about all the different kinds of cuisine available on Earth. Interestingly, of all the exotic dishes Jonas had described, the one thing that really stood out to Wyndon was the Reuben sandwich. Wyndon had never heard of corned beef or sauerkraut. He couldn't imagine what the taste would be like, and what would something like Thousand Island dressing taste like? It was on the occasion of Wyndon's 750th birthday that he decided to go to Earth. He had lived a long and eventful life, and feeling in a reflective mood about his many adventures, he decided he needed a grand challenge for the year ahead. The universe needed to hear about this poor backwater world going through a terrible bout of cosmic rays. Wyndon was sure there was a book to be written, and he was the one to write it. It would be his 7,000th book, and truly a crowning achievement. It took months, even for an exalted Grand Wizard, to track down Earth and the vast reaches of the universe. Wyndon wrote whole new incantations that had never been tried before to help him find the small planet in its obscure star system. Finally, he located the planet and started to pick up broadcasts from Earth, radio signals that played in his mind. The languages of Earth were new and exotic, but to an experienced linguist like Wyndon, he was quickly able to become fluent in the different languages he heard. Many nights, Wyndon would lie back in his bed and listen to the delightful sounds of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir in his head, which was his favorite music so far from all the different kinds he had heard from Earth. He listened to the sermons on Mormon radio and thought they were hilarious. Jonas had told him about Salt Lake City, and he was curious to travel there. It was at the top of his list. Visit Salt Lake City and have a Reuben sandwich. Carlos was getting near the end of his shift, and it was almost time to close the restaurant at the Peary Hotel. The restaurant had emptied out, and Carlos was taking a short break from the kitchen, looking out the front window of the restaurant. He watched a man with a dog coming down the street. As the man approached the window, he looked up at Carlos. Carlos, a little self-conscious by the way the man looked at him, waved awkwardly. The man waved back, said something to his dog which made him lie down on the sidewalk, and headed up the stairs to the restaurant door. Michael, the last waiter on duty, showed the man to a seat and told him they'd be closing in a short while, but he was welcome to order. The man ordered a Reuben sandwich. Carlos smiled to himself when he saw the order come through the kitchen window. He knew how to make a Reuben sandwich. The praises he had received for the 24 sandwiches he had made earlier in the day still rang pleasantly in his ears. He toasted the rye bread and slathered it with homemade Thousand Island dressing, piled on a quarter pound of corned beef, and topped it off with a generous helping of sauerkraut. He grilled the sandwich for a couple of minutes, put it on a plate, and added a side of potato salad, a bag of chips, and a pickle. Wyndon had been enjoying the ambiance of the restaurant at the Peary Hotel. As he sipped on the local Wasatch ale, he thought that maybe he'd get a room at this establishment for the night. Wyndon had landed several hours earlier in the fall of 1997. He and Samson had arrived during twilight, and no one had seen them when they had suddenly materialized. Wyndon had spells that would dress him in the local costume and fill his pockets with the local currency, so he was prepared when he traveled. Now, as Wyndon sat at the table sipping his beer, no one would guess that he was the exalted Grand Wizard from a far-off planet, many light years away. He looked like any other tourist in his mid-50s. Michael brought the plate with the Reuben sandwich to the table, and Wyndon ordered a second beer. The first one had gone down like water. Wyndon examined the sandwich from various angles, smelling it carefully. He wanted to savor this virgin Reuben experience. He used his finger to scoop up some of the dressing spilling out of the sides of the sandwich. Oh, yum, thought Wyndon. He picked up the sandwich and took his first bite, slowly chewing to fully taste the combination of flavors. Here's a little background on the sandwich Wyndon was enjoying. The beef came from a happy cow that had lived a nice but short life on a ranch in Australia. The sauerkraut began its life as a happy cabbage grown at an organic farm in central Utah. The rye bread was baked locally in Salt Lake City at a family bakery run by devout and joyful Mormons. The Thousand Island dressing, as I mentioned earlier, was whipped up from scratch by Carlos. He was using a family recipe when he made it. Cosmically, the sandwich was infused with good vibes. Wyndon, being an exalted Grand Wizard, was sensitive to the cosmic vibes of the food and enjoyed a food buzz from the sandwich which made the trip more than worth it. "This place ain't so bad," thought Wyndon to himself. Wyndon got a room at the hotel for the night and spent the rest of the evening watching the strange box with moving pictures. He fell asleep, content, with Samson lying next to him on the bed while watching a show called Saturday Night Live. It was the next morning that the troubles began. Wyndon had a whole ritual of morning incantations to maintain his health and age, spells that shaved his face, combed his hair, dressed him for the day, etc. None of them worked. Wyndon tried using different languages. Nothing worked. Wyndon did his best not to panic. This had never in 20 lifetimes happened to him. He always had his spells and incantations. He felt suddenly naked and vulnerable. He tried his spells to return home, and they didn't work either. This was bad, very bad. Wyndon sat on the bed in the hotel room and patiently tried numerous spells over the next several hours. He tried translating several incantations into the local language, and after many tries, he succeeded in making a small pile of local currency appear on the bed. That would help, but it wouldn't get him home. He stayed a week at the Perry Hotel, sorting out what to do next. At least there would be Reuben sandwiches. There were Reuben sandwiches, but they were nothing like the first one. Carlos had been hit by a car while riding his bike home the night before and was now in the hospital with a number of broken bones. Carlos wasn't going to be making any more Reuben sandwiches for quite a while. Wyndon ordered Reubens from the restaurant for several days, but was disappointed by the experience. Sure, they looked like Carlos's Reuben sandwich, but the flavor was all wrong and the cosmic vibe, just not the same. Maybe it was the Swiss cheese Kelly added, so he ordered it without the cheese and it was still disappointing. For an intergalactic food lover like Wyndon of Francis, the disappointment was too much. In his mind, he could still taste the first sandwich and these pale imitations prepared by head chef Kelly were lacking in love and care. These sandwiches had the same characteristic bad vibe as most of the food he had tasted on this planet. After a week of eating Earth food all around Salt Lake City, Wyndon was feeling oversaturated by bad cosmic vibes. Wyndon left Salt Lake City the next week and became a nomad, traveling the highways and byways of the country. He headed to Los Angeles and tried every Reuben sandwich he could find along the way. Then he headed to Washington, then Minnesota, then Kansas, then Philadelphia, and on and on. He traveled around the United States many times. He was searching for the perfect Reuben sandwich, one that could rival his memory of the Reuben sandwich Carlos had created. His memory had become a holy grail of flavor, and he spent his time on his grail quest. It was 20 years later that Wyndon passed away. He was in Omaha, Nebraska. He had been on the trail of Jonas for a long time, having heard numerous stories about this elusive wizard as he traveled. He hoped that Jonas would help him get back home. The night he died, he had a Reuben sandwich at a little deli in Omaha. The sandwich was made by a happy round man who whistled while he lovingly prepared the sandwich for Wyndon. Wyndon was sitting at a small table, sipping a tasty local beer. He could smell the cosmic good vibes wafting from the kitchen even before the sandwich arrived. The sandwich was good, even great, but it still fell a bit short of the memory of Carlos's Reuben. Several years after Wyndon had died on planet Earth, he reincarnated back on Meeble. It was good to be back home. Wyndon grew up and wrote his 7,000th book, a galactic bestseller about life on planet Earth. Later, many years later, with the use of new and deeply involved incantations, Wyndon found his way back in time and space to that first evening in Salt Lake City. He got to relive the one sandwich over and over again that would satisfy his memory. After many times of reliving the experience, Wyndon decided that it was definitely the Thousand Island dressing that made the difference, that and the cosmic vibe.
The Mechanics by Joe Hertel, read by the author, music by Loophool.
Hello. The sun will not appear today. Hello. Odd, there was no response. Gree checked the communication relays and found them active. Hello, are you receiving? Hey, Gretal, send your father down the belt. There seems to be a problem with the communication device. Very well, Grandpa. Pops! Hey, Pops! Grumbling about being disturbed, Talagree popped the button and said, "You know I'm busy." Sorry, Pops. Grandpa needs you at Dawn Horizon. Talagree hadn't been to Dawn Horizon in hundreds of years. Last time was just an inspection, and another wasn't due for another 837 years. All right, I'll get on the belt. Sorry, Pops, that won't work. Had a breakdown at the 6-hour marker. What? There hadn't been a breakdown in over 10,000 years. Has Grandpa made the call? Don't think so. Said he was having a problem with the communication device. Okay, on my way. He climbed into the cycle and was soon traveling at top speed of 1,987 miles per hour, only 3 hours to the 6-hour marker. He plugged into the solar system mainframe to access service records passing the time. The system had come online 157,163 years ago, and there had been 17 breakdowns since system inception, but none for 10,326 years. Topsiders had returned to building products of exceptional quality, and this system had an expected lifespan of 500,000 years. Hopefully they could return the sun to its half orbit and only miss one day. The last breakdown had taken 3 days and 15 topside engineers to repair. Clicking the transport communicator, he said, "Gretal, what is the nature of the breakdown?" "Guessing it's tectonic, Pop." "Okay, be there in a couple hours." As fifth generation and current catcher, Talagree was in charge of the system and responsible for its continual, consistent operation. Without information on the problem and an estimated time of repair, he could expect topside communication as soon as he arrived at Dawn Horizon. Only two nodes of communication existed to the topside of the planet, one at Dawn Horizon and the other at Dusk Horizon. The planet had stopped revolving well before the system inception and way before Talagree's memory. "Ingenious system," thought Talagree, using old abandoned space elevators to fashion a whip, tipped with a Dyson sphere to capture the sun each day, harness all of its energy, then whip it back around topside, keeping the planet revolving. Talagree arrived at 6-hour marker, finding Gretal measuring the gap between two belts. The belts were a magnetic levitation conveyor system that normally ran at 512 miles per hour, but when a gap of more than 12 feet 3 inches was detected, the belt behind the gap would slowly come to a halt. "Where's the sun?" asked Talagree. "About 4 miles back." "How large is the gap?" 13 feet 7 inches. "What was it yesterday?" 12 feet exactly. "Metal fatigue?" "Not that I can detect, Pops." Almost 5,000 years ago, Talagree had given up on getting Gretal to stop calling him Pops. Gretal was sixth and final generation, and some topside engineer probably thought it was funny to give him a teenager's lingo. "Any issues with the whip link?" asked Talagree. "Nope. Was routine until I felt the safety engage." 1 foot 4 inches was not going to be reduced with all the grease they could find. "All right, going on down to Dawn Horizon for help," said Talagree. Climbing back into the cycle, Talagree clicked on the transporter communicator. "Grandpa, we've got a gap that's too large to continue Hyperion's race." "Still no response from topside," said Gree. "Okay, on my way. Somebody should be there by the time I arrive." It would take about 2.4 hours using the additional 512 miles per hour from the belt that was still functioning. Talagree ran the cycle up a service ramp onto the belt and was quickly at maximum velocity. Puzzling, thought Talagree, topside response should have been established by now. In less than 3 hours, the sun will not appear and they'll have no choice but to respond. Plugging back into the mainframe, Talagree looked up the last topside communication contact. It had been 737 years ago for a 3-minute delay due to a catch being slowed by solar flares. The energy storage batteries had to be vented that day, as they had filled up to capacity from the flare. Mechanics couldn't really enjoy their jobs, but Talagree had gotten to look forward to the catch, engaging the crane, tightening the whip, targeting the star, flinging the whip, and then closing the massive Dyson sphere around the sun had become an efficient process that he was proud of. At first it took him almost 5 hours to complete the catch, but now usually he could accomplish his task in under 3 hours. First and second generation took closer to 12 hours to make the catch, so topsiders only got the sun once every 2 days. Battery storage was not as big back then either. Topside had to really scramble to use up all their allotted energy. Now the energy consumption and the energy produced were balanced so that each day the catch, the transport, and the throw used up exactly what it produced. What did they do with the energy produced topside, wondered Talgree. He had never been topside, built strictly to work on the downside in darkness. His builders had never found a need to provide him with sight sensors. All his work was performed with a laser guidance system. Grandpa Gree had ocular circuits, but he was not a mobile mechanic, only occupying his throwing shed, never needing to go anyplace else. No response, son, said Gree, greeting Talgree at dawn horizon. Wow, only 3 minutes until the sun should rise. You'd think they'd want to know why, stated Talgree. We are a mostly forgotten system, Tal. You know that. Well, we have earned our reputation for being reliable. Grandpa, the gap has widened to 14 feet, 8 inches. Definitely tectonic. I felt the rumble, interrupted Gree Tal. Check the whip, responded Gree. Okay. Hello, hello. The sun will not appear today, said Gree into the topside communicator. No response in over 5 hours. Odd. They change shifts every 4 hours, so at least 2 topsiders heard the communication, said Talgree. Better go check the line, son. Both of the horizons were hardwired to topside stations as a failsafe for communication. Talgree stepped out of the shed, felt for the communication wire, and set out to ensure it was still connected. Only 26 feet from the throwing shed was the topside viewing platform. In the early days of the system, Talgree had been told that many topsiders crowded the platform to see the sun being thrown back into its half orbit. Now, no one watched, no one cared. The sun almost always came up. The line was secure and intact. Talgree popped his communicator switch. Physical connection confirmed. Hello? Hello? The sun will not appear today, said Gree. Talgree waited 5 minutes. No response, Tal. I heard the message from the loudspeakers. How can there be no response? Fourth generation and above mechanics were built with the ability to modify their programming. Talgree had built himself worry circuits in an attempt to foresee problems. Gree and Greetal had adopted worry circuits as they had become useful in maintaining consistent system service. Now his worry circuits were firing off rapid messages that something was severely wrong. Never been past the viewing platform, Gramps. Going on over to the control booth. Okay, said Gree with a worried edge on his voice. 5 feet from the viewing platform, Talgree found the connection line and followed it, hoping to find the booth. He found the booth 306 feet from the viewing platform. Hello? No response. Hello? No one here, Gramps. How can that be? Hold on, son. I'll have to look up protocol. 17 minutes later, Gree clicked on. Can you get into the booth, son? Sorry, no schematics. Sending, responded Gree. Talgree could suddenly call up what a booth was and found an entryway called door. Moving to the door, he found that he had to turn a doorknob. To gain access, doing so, he entered the booth, popped his communicator button, and said, access accomplished. Okay, find the communicator switch. Using the downloaded schematic, his laser system quickly found the switch, and in trying to flip it, he found some sticks in the way. Brushing them aside, he flipped the switch and heard through the communication system. Response active. Bunch of sticks were in the way, Grandpa, but the system is still working. Son, turn on the cameras. Finding the switch cluttered by more sticks, Talgree had to remove them to access the cameras. Oh no, yelled Gree. What? Those aren't sticks. They're bones. I can see a hat on one of them. The readout above your head reads, System shut down. When? 737 years ago. Topsiders had ceased to exist.
In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard The Wizard of Another World by John Christopher, reading and music by the author. The Mechanics by Joe Hertel, read by the author, music by Loophole. Theme music by Dane Luscombe. Be sure to visit us at spacecowboybooks.com.